drinking town with a football problem. Hey everybody, welcome into the Piffles Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Alex.
And I'm Steve.
I'm Ferlin.
And I'm Amy.
That is not Amy, actually. Amy's off this week, but filling her seat this week, we have Greg joining us.
Hey guys.
Thanks for joining us, Greg.
Thanks for having me. Made the big show.
First off, make sure you follow us on Twitter at PifflesPod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
Follow me at Safamod.
Myself at Fernie635.
And me at Greg on Sports.
And make sure you give Amy a follow at CFL Hottie Bowl. Make sure you like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. We're on Instagram, just search PifflesPod. And make sure you check out the website, PifflesPodcast.com. As always, Piffles Podcast is brought to you by Bryn Werrett at Royal LePage Regina Realty. Check out BrynWerrett.com. That's BrynWerrett.com. Coming up on this week's show, we have a game to talk about. We don't have a game to talk about from last week as the Riders were on a bye, but we're going to talk about the upcoming game, Riders in Calgary, on Saturday, July 27th at 7 p.m., so we'll take a look at that game. Stemming off that, we're going to be joined this week for Engaging with the Enemy by Mark Steven. He's the Stampeders play-by-play guy. We'll have our Coney Island Piffles player profile. We'll have the Hottie Bowl. We'll have a rant, and we'll get to our Piffles picks. So let's get right down to it. First off, before we start anything, we want to start with an update from a few weeks ago. On the Coney Island Cafe Piffles player profile, we had Javon Johnson join us, and he talked about having a fundraiser for Lyme disease. A day and a place are now booked and ready to go, so Javon is here with the details.
So I have a friend that lives in Ottawa who was in the Canadian military. She was discharged due to the fact that she had Lyme disease. She contracted it while she was in the military, and they denied her pension from the military. Therefore, she had to find other means to fund her treatments and things like that for Lyme disease. And she started a cupcake business, and her cupcake business really did well. And a few months ago, the business caught fire and burned down. So she had to start all over and rebuild everything, considering that she was already struggling with her heart failing and only operating at 57%. You know, you never could really say exactly what's going on, so it's kind of hard to diagnose. But at the same time, I think people need to be more educated on what it is and what it does and how it affects the body. And I think, yeah, I think it's something that needs to be talked more about in schools, and more education needs to be put forward for it, bringing awareness to Lyme disease and what it means. And I'm going to have some people there that currently have it that are going to be the spokespeople that are going to come and do Q&A and answer questions. And we're going to give out some gifts and things like that. And it'll be a fun weekend event for families and people to get together and bring awareness to Lyme disease. And I think that if the people that come out will have a great time. You know, we're going to barbecue. We're going to give away some things. We're going to have a jungle gym for the kids, face painting. We're going to play some games and things like that. But, you know, the bigger cause is we're going to try to take donations to be able to help fund people that need help with treatment and things like that. So we're going to send the funds to Can Lyme and support of Lyme's disease. So if you want to participate, it'll be July 30th at Candy Cane Park. The time has yet to be determined, but I'm thinking around noon or 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
So there's the details on Javon Johnson's fundraiser for Lyme disease. And so again, that's going to be Sunday, July 30th at Candy Cane Park in Regina, noon, 1 o'clock, sometime around there. So if you get a chance, make sure you go out there. He's selling shirts in support of Lyme disease with his brand logo on it. So make sure you check him out on Twitter, find out all the information from him, and he'll get you a t-shirt. And just go out there and have a good time. Now, getting to some Rider news. The Riders actually made some announcements before we recorded, which was a nice change for once. The big news, the Riders signed defensive back A.J. Jefferson out of who Ottawa just released last week. Your guys' take?
Oh, I think that's a great depth signing. It's not a position that's currently of weakness for us. Our DBs have been playing pretty good. But when you get the opportunity to pick up a veteran defensive back who's been there, you take it.
I think it's a great move. Like Steve said, it's not really a position of need right now, as we wouldn't have expected to say, you know, 3 months ago. Our corners have been solid. I don't exactly know where he fits in. He's definitely not a starter at this point, I don't think, with Rogers and Johnson playing as well as they have been. But it's definitely a good solid depth move. Should work out for us in the long run. The only downside is it sounds like it kind of screwed Xavien Bingham out of a job here.
Yeah, he's not hurting too much with his training camp bid in New York with the Jets, and I certainly wish Bingham well, but when you get the chance for a guy with who's been there, as good as Bingham may have been, you got to take it.
Oh yeah, Jefferson is a known commodity. Well, Bingham well showed all the potential in the world. We don't know what he has really under real live bullets, right? My biggest surprise in the entire thing is that Ottawa gave him up that easily. I don't think he had one bad game probably.
He got absolutely torched by SJ Green for his 200-yard performance, but who hasn't been?
Yeah.
SJ Green is probably the top receiver in the league right now, the way he's playing. But you have a bad day against him, you get cut. I still think he's a solid defensive back.
And the other news, the Riders signing linebacker Jarrell Boyd-Ross, wide receiver Christian Jones, and defensive back Mark Roberts. To make room, they released defensive lineman Darius Allen, who they actually just signed a couple weeks ago. What I find interesting about these three is I was at practice on Tuesday, and the defensive back, Mark Roberts, was actually working with the offense as a wide receiver. He was getting some training over there. So Chris Jones likes to keep the guys that he likes around. It's just a matter of finding a spot for him, and there's no spot in the DBs for him right now, and I guess they're going to try him out at receiver.
That doesn't sound like something Chris Jones would do.
That always surprises me about Jones. He likes his athletes. He finds a spot for them and puts them where he thinks he needs them. If it works out, it works out. Look at some of his Frankenstein experiments he's already put out there. They seem to be paying off.
AC Leonard?
Actually, all of our defensive ends at one point were receivers. So
those are the Ryder roster moves up ahead this week. But let's get right to the game coming up this Saturday. Riders in Calgary, big game. The Riders have the momentum on their side. Calgary coming off a loss in the regular season, which hasn't happened in a meaningful regular season game since week one of the 2016 season. They haven't won in Montreal in like forever, it seems like. But that seems to be a problem for pretty much every Western team going out there, probably hitting St. Catharines Street.
But ask Dickinson, that had nothing to do with the quarterback behind center for Montreal.
Well, really, it didn't. I don't think Durant played that great of a game. He had wide open B.J. Cunningham for a touchdown, and that was because the defender fell down. If Durant doesn't make that completion, there's a problem. Defensive touchdown put Montreal up early, and they just kind of rode that and won the game.
You're not wrong.
But the Riders going in there, the annual summer Christmas game, green at red, and keys to the game. What are the keys to the game?
The biggest one for me is how our offensive line stands up against their weak, injury-plagued defensive line. Right now, the Stamps are hurting on the D-line, and our O-line has played great thus far this year. Key to the game is keeping Kevin Glenn upright, giving him time to get our receivers the ball.
I'm going to say the exact opposite. I think the key to the game is our defensive line getting to Bo Levi Mitchell. If we can get him on the turf a few times, as long as our offense is moderately successful, then I think we have a good shot at winning this game.
I can't find anything to argue with you two on. I was thinking offense and I was thinking defense, and you guys took both of my answers.
Well, in the CFL, the key to the game is always the trenches.
Yeah.
Which line performs better? And this is the one of the few times in the last few years going up against Calgary where I feel like we have the advantage on both sides of the ball. Now, defensively, it's because of injuries, but I think our O-line has performed better as well. If we win that battle of the trenches, we win this game.
Going into it, not looking at positionally, the Riders need to score early in order to take some of the bite out of the Stampeders, because you know they're going to be chomping at the bit after that loss in Montreal. They definitely need to come out flying in order to get ahead.
And I don't think that's going to happen. I don't have a lot of faith in this game. They should keep it close, but I really do think that Calgary just comes out pissed off from losing last week. And when was the last time that they've lost two games in a row? I couldn't even tell you what year that was in. I can't see them losing, especially at home, regardless of defensive line injuries and O-line play. Calgary has that next man up mentality, and that never seems to shake them.
And I can't see Jerome Messam getting kicked out two games in a row either.
And I want to see, and I didn't even know really what he got kicked out for. Did they ever say why he got kicked out? Yeah, he had the face mask on Chip Cox, but you don't get ejected for a face mask unless you're like legitimately pulling the guy's head off. And it wasn't that bad to warrant an ejection. It was a penalty for sure, but not enough to warrant an ejection. But the cameras never showed anything. So I wonder if he said something to the refs after to get the objectionable conduct.
It never really was outright stated what happened. Messam went on Twitter stating something, Cox knows what he did, but I need to keep my head on straight. Something to that effect. So obviously Cox did something underneath his skin, and Messam realizes he did enough to get ejected. So maybe he did say something to the ref. Maybe he said something to Cox. Who knows?
Well, and once he got ejected, the Calgary offense just didn't look right. And that was adjusting to have it a different running back and pretty much adjusting their entire playbook. And that, like you said, that's not going to happen again. He's not going to get ejected. I really think they're going to get him involved early and often in this game. And might be a long night for the Riders defense. But the one thing that the Riders have been doing pretty well is playing that little dink and dunk offense, controlling the ball. They had a run game last game against Hamilton. So if they can do that against Calgary's defense and keep Bo Levi Mitchell on that offense off the field, they have a chance. I don't know. Something about this, it just screams loss to me. But we'll get to that in our picks a little bit later on in the show. To talk a little bit more about the game this week, we're going to be joined by Mark Steven of 770 AM in Calgary for this week's Engaging with the Enemy. Mark, thanks for taking our call.
Good, looking forward to it. Stampeders have been away for a couple of weeks, so nice to come back against a long-standing foe like Saskatchewan.
Now, for the first time in what seems like forever, Calgary lost a regular season game that actually mattered in the standings last week in Montreal. How did the team react to that after the game?
Well, after the game, they were very happy with themselves. They realized that they left a lot of points on the field. I mean, early in the game, they drove the ball quite well. Their stats are actually not all that bad, but they ended up those drives with threes instead of sevens. That's not ideal situation, so that came back to haunt them later on. And, you know, they weren't really happy with themselves. They know they weren't sharp in some areas. There were some key drops. There was the player ejection and a few things. So they weren't very happy, and I guess we'll find out this week about their bounce-back capacity because, like you say, they haven't lost a game that really had a big impact in the standings for quite a while.
So speaking of that game, Jerome Messam was ejected early on in the game, and that seemed to set the tone. First, did he do anything other than grab the face mask of Chip Cox? Because that's all we could really see on TV. And second, how much of a loss was Jerome Messam to the team in that game?
Well, two things. First of all, because I was looking at the fumble and the fallouts from that, I really didn't see what happened. I saw the same replay. I didn't see it live at the time. All Jerome Messam said, and he answered questions on Saturday, is, I can't let somebody get in my head like that. So I'm going to assume there are a few things that weren't and shouldn't have been picked up on the TV that were said as well. So that's the number one thing I'm going to think. Did it impact the team? Yeah, I think it was quite a turning point in the game. Number one, they were coming off of a touchdown, which was given up via the fumble. And then you lost your top running back. He was gone for the game. Already the running game was struggling a bit because of a patchwork offensive line that really hadn't worked together. But Messam was capable of bowling out quite a few yards on his own. He wasn't available. So, yeah, I do think it had quite an impact on the team and certainly didn't help their cause. It wasn't the only reason they lost, but it sure didn't help the cause.
Now, injuries are starting to hit the Stampeders defensive line. Is there any talk of people or someone being airlifted in? Are they going to try and make do with the players they have now?
Well, first of all, it looks like Charleston Hughes is going to be back this week, so that'll certainly eliminate some of the woes caused by the injuries. They already have been airlifting in quite a few guys, and even those guys got hurt. They signed a Whiteside who was previously with Ottawa, was supposed to go to Edmonton's camp, didn't make it there. He got injured. He's gone for an extended period. They signed two guys last week. Frank, who was with the Eskimos before, they brought him in, and he played and started, actually, and they brought Ben D'Aguilar back. Ben was let go by the Stamps at the end of camp, so they have begun an airlift. They've used a dozen linemen already, so in terms of bringing in players, if they have to, they will. The market isn't exactly flush with those kind of guys right now, and they have brought some in, but hopefully some of these guys will start to get healthy, and I think it's going to start with Charleston Hughes this weekend. But no question, it's been tough constantly rotating players in and out of the defensive line, and I think that's one of the contributing factors as well to the loss. The line was inexperienced, and Terrell Sutton had a tremendous game for Montreal, and I thought took advantage of it along the ground there.
Jumping ahead to Saturday night against the Riders, how much of a chance do the Riders have against a pissed-off Stamps team coming off a loss?
Well, Saskatchewan's regular season history in Calgary is terrible. The playoff history is a little different. They have a very good record. I mean, everybody's got a chance, of course, and, you know, Saskatchewan's coming off of a win, but statistically, and the odds would suggest the Stampeders are going to be favored and by quite a bit, so we'll just have to see what happens with the game. But, you know, the Stampeders, you know, have got something to prove. They just didn't play to their standards the other day, and I think they're as much worried about themselves as they are the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. But are the Rough Riders decided underdogs in this game? Yes, I would have to say for sure, and the Stampeders want to get back to where they think they should be, and they'll do so, they hope, at the Rough Riders' expense there.
Has there been any talk about the impact of the air quality because of the BC wildfires for this game?
Well, not right now, but it, you're right. It is certainly an issue. It's not bad today. It wasn't too bad of practice today, but for other future days, there's talk of more coming in. So, yeah, it could be an issue. You know, it's very noticeable, I got to say that. It's a little hazy, even at 7 o'clock at night. You can sort of see some of the haze out there. So, yeah, it could be a problem. Whether it still is a factor by Saturday, I don't know. But all I can tell you is, if you look at the maps and hear the reports and everything, there's an endless supply, unfortunately, of fires and, by extension, fire smoke that's going to be coming over from BC. So I will watch as we get closer to the day, but sure, it could be a factor for sure.
How much are the linemen, both offense and defense, looking forward to playing against their former teammates like Derek Dennis and Zach Minter?
Well, that'll be interesting. Derek will certainly announce his arrival 10 minutes before the rest of the team arrives. He's certainly a gregarious, outgoing guy. And, you know, obviously the fact that he's gone is a big hole for the team to replace. They've had to juggle people through that position. I'm sure they'll enjoy playing him. He's a tremendous player. Zach Minter wasn't quite as big a part of the team as Derek Dennis was, but obviously a player that was here last year, and the team respected him for sure. So, yeah, I think there'll be a lot of interest in playing both of those guys and see how they do. And, you know, the rest of that Saskatchewan line, obviously Jefferson's off to a very good start with them, so we'll see what the rest of them do. But, yeah, I think there'll be a lot of interest, particularly Derek Dennis, who will certainly let everybody know he's back at McMahon Stadium.
Now, the Riders kept it close in both games against Calgary last year, and that was with arguably a much worse team than they have today. Do you see this being a close game as well?
Well, we'll just have to wait and see. You know, different things can happen. You know, if Bo Levi Mitchell continues his strong play, but so's Kevin Glenn been playing very strong. You know, I still think the Stampeders are favored, probably by 8 to 10 points, and I think the Stampeders are going to try and get back on track and eliminate some of the things that got them into trouble. But you know what? If the lineup doesn't produce, if they can't field the guys they want, Saskatchewan maybe can come in here and steal a game. Like I say, their regular season history here is terrible. Playoffs is a different story, but this is July, and not too many trips to the Grey Cup are being awarded just yet. So, you know, the Stampeders are favored, but let's just watch it unfold and play and see what the Saskatchewan Rough Riders do here.
So, prediction time, what do you think the final score is going to be?
I think the Calgary Stampeders are going to win this game. I think it will be by a count of 35-21. So there's a 2-touchdown gap between the two teams, and I think the Stampeders will be firing at all cylinders. The Rough Riders will get a big play or two from, you know, some of their fine receivers. Maybe Bakari Grant or Roosevelt shakes free and puts some points on the board. But on balance, I think the Stampeders are going to win by a relatively comfortable margin of 14 points.
Well, the atmosphere should be electric this weekend. Mark, thanks so much for being with us.
No problem. Looking forward to it. It's 2 trips for the Rough Riders to Calgary, but I'm really looking forward to the trip there when we go in September on the 24th. So it should be a great rivalry, and, you know, I haven't played them since August of last year. It's almost been a full calendar year, so looking forward to seeing the Green Gang when they come over here.
Enjoy the game, but not too much, okay?
Okay, sounds good. Thanks for calling.
That was Mark Steven, the Calgary Stampeders play-by-play guy, here on Engaging with the Enemy on the Piffles Podcast. Now, looking back a touch to one of the last week's games, the story wasn't so much the game itself, it was a bad call that unfortunately resulted in a lady in Winnipeg not winning $1 million. I'm talking about TSN's touchdown to win. Karen Kuldis of Winnipeg had $1 million seemingly in her hands, and then a bad flag happened. The deal behind this contest is if 2 kickoffs are returned for touchdowns, you win $1 million. The first one that's returned, you get a $25,000 home theater system. So she got that off the opening kickoff, which Winnipeg returned for a touchdown. And there was a punt returned for a touchdown in between that. That one didn't count. And Martise Jackson of Toronto ended up returning a kickoff for a touchdown, but there was a penalty flag thrown at the end of the play on an illegal block from behind that was, what, 8 yards away from the play itself? So it had absolutely nothing to do with the play. It was at the end of, it was on the 20-yard line, but the rules are you can't block anybody in the back, and that's what kind of happened. But either way, she didn't win $1 million. Now, my question is, do we feel bad for her for, and I put this in quotes, losing $1 million? And I say losing like that because she never had $1 million.
She almost had $1 million once before. Her family won, was it almost $700,000 in a lottery once before?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, that's been coming around the news lately. Before that came out, I felt a little bad for her. You know, she's going to be watching the rest of the CFL season and everything else on a $25,000 home entertainment system. Hard to really feel that bad. But I don't think the league got it wrong. I think the onus on that situation was on the player not to put his hands out. The guy called what he thought was right, and the league responded appropriately. I mean, what all did she get out of the deal? Free groceries for a year, season tickets for a couple of years, $50,000 worth of air miles.
Trip to the Grey Cup this year.
A VIP trip to the Grey Cup, you know, on the CFL's dime. Well, yeah, it's not $1 million, but she probably got $100,000-$150,000 worth of stuff out of the deal that may have a better effect on her family than the million might have.
It's not like the league owed her anything either. By the letter of the law, the ref's decision is how it is, and they didn't have to give her anything. I've seen a lot of chatter online, guys freaking out, essentially saying the league owes her more, the owners should pay $1 million out of their pockets to make this right. First of all, the CFL has nothing to do with this. This is a Safeway Sobeys contest that their insurance is paying for, not them out of their pocket. So it's not up to the league to make her whole. Would have been nice if she won. Yeah, it would have been a good story. But the league owes her nothing, and they took what could have been a really bad PR situation and kind of flipped it on its head.
I say they should have just made her kick a 50-yard field goal. If she makes that, there's $1 million.
And a job in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
I missed that competition.
That one was fun.
I think that was a better competition because there was actually something to it for the contestant. But
after the first couple years, that was painful to watch.
It was bad.
Having just gone for our annual touch football game at the field and having our kicking contest, I would not want to see us have to go through that. We had, what, one made from beyond 30?
We had one made from 30.
Ah, that's right.
Well, that's because I wasn't there. I at least knock them in from 35.
Yeah.
Hey, at least Ferland Milo had one.
He did.
He did. Nice.
Dinked it right off the same post that Carpina hit earlier. Probably about the same spot, too.
Yeah, right about there. Same yard line even, too. Yeah.
So, consensus, we don't really feel bad. We feel, like, a little bad for her, but ultimately there's not much you can do, right?
I'm sure if I was in her shoes and I thought I had $1 million as I'm cheering for a Argonaut to run down the sideline, only for it to come back, one, I would be very embarrassed because I was cheering for an Argonaut, and two, it probably would sting. But at the end of the day, she does get that. She gets her entertainment system, and like you said, groceries, VIP, season tickets the Bombers didn't need to throw in, but they did anyway, and $50,000 in worth of air miles. Like, she did well, despite the fact all she did was go buy groceries that week.
In the CFL today, can you really get excited about a play until you see flags on the ground? You got to kind of pace yourself until everything settles down and you can kind of sort everything out, or you're just going to be disappointed.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. At the end of pretty much every touchdown in the CFL this year, I wait
around
2 seconds and then, yes. It's hard to feel bad for her, though, honestly. I mean, it sucks. I do feel for her family a little bit, but
it's a contest where you had nothing going in and you still leave with something.
Yeah.
To me, that's what it comes down to. Craig said, if that happened to me, yeah, I'd probably be pretty upset about it. But at the same time, I didn't have $1 million going in, so it's not like I lost anything. That was the news when the Riders don't play on a bye week. That's the big story of the week.
It's pretty quiet around here.
Can't get mad at Chris Jones for anything this week.
On a flip side, can you imagine how weird it would have felt to be sitting there cheering for your opposition to score a touchdown?
Oh, for $1 million, I'll cheer for much anybody.
Absolutely, right? But but think about that. We've been all been fans of the team for, you know, near on 30 years or more. To actively root for your team to get scored upon, it's kind of like those fans who were actively rooting for Durant to win earlier this year. It would just feel weird. but I'd do it for $1 million.
In a heartbeat, not a question. Would you give up your team for one play for $1 million? Hell yeah.
It could be a game losing touchdown. I'd still give it up.
Yeah, no doubt.
They could run 10 kickoffs back, and I could care less. If I won $1 million, keep on going.
Yep. Now, don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and check out piffles podcast.com for much more. And don't forget to join our CFL Piffles Pick'em group. There's still time to get in on that. Just throw 200 confidence on everybody and then win those, and you're right back into it with our league and how mediocre we are. We're moderately successful Piffles Pick'em group.
Coming up next, we have our Coney Island Poutine Cafe, Piffles player profile, and this week's Hottie Bowl. Stick around.
Piffles Podcast is supported in part by Bryn Werrett at Royal LePage Regina Realty. A longtime volunteer with your Regina Thunder, Bryn is a proud supporter of local football. Check out BrynWerrett.com, that's BrynWerrett.com, while you enjoy the rest of this episode of the Piffles Podcast.
This week's Piffles Player Profile brought to you by Coney Island Poutine Cafe, the best poutine in the prairies. Check out their two locations in Regina. Take it away, Steve.
All right, this week's Piffles Player Profile is AJ Jefferson. AJ Jefferson went to Fresno State before signing with the NFL's Arizona Cardinals in 2010 as an undrafted free agent. In 2012, Jefferson was traded to the Minnesota Vikings. As a Packers fan, I have to boo that. He spent 2014 on the Seattle Seahawks practice roster before heading up north to Toronto in 2015. He's got career NFL stats of 109 tackles and a pair of interceptions. After 2 years in Toronto and 3 games in Ottawa, 2 played, Jefferson is on his way now to Saskatchewan, and I couldn't be happier.
Welcome to the team, AJ Jefferson. Be interesting to see if they get him on the roster, not this week more than likely, but in the next couple weeks, and see what he can do on this defense. But time now to move on. Let's get to the Hottie Bowl. So even though Amy's not here this week, we still have a Hottie Bowl, and she informed me that she's not going to take a player this week. She's going to do 2 next week to make up for it, but since she's not here and I can't get in trouble for this, this is what someone has been waiting for a long time. We're going to induct a water boy into the Hottie Bowl. And you guys are laughing because you guys know what's coming. To be an honorary member into the Hottie Bowl, we're going to induct Robert Dalton at Rouge Daltz on Twitter. Daltz, you made it. You are the official water boy of the Hottie Bowl. Make sure you give him a follow. Like I said, at Rouge Daltz on Twitter. He also podcasts for Rouge Radio. Make sure you check them out. Proud partner of the Canadian Football Podcast Network. So make sure you give him a follow. Robert, congratulations. And go get some water for us.
Keep wearing those jorts to the gym.
Amy's going to be so mad.
Yeah, probably.
So nobody can tell him that he's actually in this until like he figures it out on his own, right?
Oh, of course.
Oh, the best part is Amy's going to have to change her profile picture.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry, Amy. That's what you get for skipping out on the show and choosing work over us. So congratulations, Daltz. You made it. Don't forget, you can get your Hottie Bowl merchandise at piffles podcast.com. Check it out in the shop there, and maybe you, too, can be an honorary member of the Hottie Bowl, just like Daltz. Now, coming up next, we're going to have our Rant of the Week, and then we'll have a chat with Rider legend Roger Aldag. That comes up after this.
You are listening to Piffles Podcast, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
All right, welcome back to the Piffles Podcast. Time now to get to a rant.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
And since we have a special guest this week, we're going to let our special guest do a rant for us. Greg, let's hear what you got.
So the past week, the main story coming out of bye week is lack of craft beer at Mosaic Stadium. The Saskatchewan Craft Brewers Association, and at some point rightfully so, is angry that the Riders have exclusive porch rights with Molson Coors, and they aren't allowed to have beers in the stadium, which was essentially promised by the City of Regina, which runs the stadium. And when I first started thinking about this, at first I was going to say, hey, believe me, I love craft beer. There's only two things I like more than craft beer, and that's free beer. And until recently, I didn't realize I love this even more than free beer, is free beer that Ferlin hands me. But the thing that kind of got me mad is the way that the organization has kind of went, well, there's nothing to see here. We don't owe you an explanation. We don't owe you this. We don't owe you that. Somewhere something went wrong, and not enough has come out about it. The Craft Beer Association says they were offered 3 kegs. Well, 3 kegs for an entire stadium of people doesn't get you that far. At some point, they said they weren't even offered to be in the stadium. It's out. They were offered to be in the party in the park, but no one knows. And that, I think that's part of the problem here. No one knows what happened. The stadium was funded by taxpayers' money, and people are pissed because there's no answers and no craft beer. I don't know how you guys feel, but I know there's a lot of people out there that are quite angry about this.
I can get really worked up about this. I have nothing against craft beer. It's not my cup of tea, glass of beer, pint, whatever. But I have nothing against it being sold at the stadium. That said, the Riders are a business, first and foremost. They're not in the game to get other people money. They're in the game to get them money. And Molson gave them a boatload of money for being a founding sponsor of the new stadium and also for the porridge rights. So it's a business decision. Craft beer places were offered a table at the new stadium. They declined it. They were offered a spot in Confederation Park, the little pregame tailgate before the games. They declined that. Were they crappy deals that the Riders gave them? Probably. But at the same time, create that demand. If they're only going to let you have, 3 kegs or whatever, sell those 3 kegs. Sell out. Have people come up and be like, oh, you don't have any more? Oh, well, what the hell? And then they'll talk to them, and they'll tweet the Riders. They'll tag them on Facebook and everything. Create that demand. Get your foot in the door. To me, it's just simple business. Now, I'm not saying accept every single deal that's thrown at you, but if it's a matter of getting into the stadium, which is what you want, or not being in the stadium, probably take the deal.
One of the big conspiracy theories that was coming out from all this is the fact that Steve Mazurek's son is on the director of sales in Saskatchewan, something like that.
He's the Western sales rep.
Yeah. And that there was this obvious family relationship and why this deal went down. It came out today that Steve Mazurek actually backed out of any discussions regarding pouring rights at the stadium, specifically because his son works for Molson Coors. So that conspiracy theory was, thrown right out the window. To me, I'm with Alex. They had the opportunity to prove that the demand was there, and instead of just demanding a bigger piece of the pie right off the bat, they should have taken it, shown that the demand was there, show that people wanted it, and give the Riders and the city reason to go back to the table and say, okay, let's keep adding. Let's give you more access because you're bringing in business. I don't think beer sales are going to be all that affected by the lack of craft beer. Craft beer people will still drink regular beer. Regular beer people, if craft beer is available, sure, they'll take it, but they're still going to drink the Molson products that are there. Nobody's going to a game to go, yeah, I really want to try that local brewery. So
now you see it at a whole bunch of different stadiums that they'll probably have the craft brews being sold there, and it's usually about, 3%?
And I think, though, what a lot of people's problem with that is the city made a big deal when they announced the stadium saying it's going to be Saskatchewan this, it's going to be Saskatchewan that. You can have your local beer at sitting in your seat watching your local team play, and then they gave the Riders exclusivity, the power to sign an exclusivity agreement. But that thing is, with the Riders' exclusive agreement now carries over to the soccer game this week. It carries over to concerts. It carries over to everything else because they're the biggest fish in the pond.
And I absolutely have no issue with that. This stadium would not have been built without the corporate dollars that went into it. So in the end, you got to bow down to the big dogs. And, unfortunately, we're going to lose out on... There's some pretty good local breweries in the city. The corporate dollars is exactly where... What ended this discussion. And I'm completely okay with it. I love craft beer. I love the stuff that we've got in Regina. There's some really good ones. But they're a small portion of beer sales in Canada. I don't see why they think they should have a bigger piece of the pie at the stadium right off the bat.
All this talk is making me thirsty. So let's move on here and get to our drinks that are sitting outside waiting for us.
Molson products, I might add.
Well, they were free.
Yeah, so. Exactly, and they were free. I just need Ferlin to hand me, and I hit the trifecta.
Alex handed it to you.
Yeah, oh, there you go.
That counts.
No, it's better if Ferlin hands it to me.
Next time.
It's the one beer thing. When you win a beer, although there are beers that Alex won, if you get Ferlin to hand it to Greg, Greg would be beyond ecstatic.
Mm. That's true.
There you go.
It's true.
All right, well, let's get going here, because I want to get to that beer. Time now for my personal favorite segment of the show that we do. Let's talk to Rider alumni. Joining us this week, we have one of eight men to have his jersey number retired by the Riders, Rider legend number 44, offensive lineman Roger Aldegg. Mr. Aldegg, thanks for joining us on the Piffles podcast this week.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
Now, right off the bat, being a kid from Saskatchewan, what was it like growing up to play for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders?
Well, it was kind of a dream of mine right from the beginning. I had my older brother, Barry, that kind of made the footsteps for me, and he played before I did. I was in public school, whatever, at Gull Lake, and it was a dream to someday play for the Rough Riders, but it, you know, it seemed like a distant dream at some times, but it, as it turned out, it was a thrill, because I was a big fan of the Rough Riders growing up in Gull Lake, and, you know, sitting back and watching the games on TV and listening on the radio. It was, you know, always a Rough Rider fan my entire life, and now I'm back being a fan again as well, as alumni.
So since you retired from football, what's been keeping you busy?
Well, I was very fortunate. After I retired in 1992, I had the opportunity. I got a job with Sask Energy, Transgas, and the Land Department, and it's been a great, great career after football for myself, and you know, it's a great company to work for. I just retired there a little over a year ago, but I still do some contract work at this time with Watson Land, and my boss now is Garth Hoffert, and he's a great individual as well. So I do a little bit of that. I spend a lot of time probably doing just a little bit of golfing and stuff like that, but work here and there as well.
Now, mentioning the word retired, you're one of the few players that ever played for the Riders to have their number retired. What does that mean to you?
Well, I mean, when you look at it, you see the names up there, the, you know, the greats that were involved in the plane crash, and Ronnie and George and Dave. I mean, I just feel kind of, you know, a little bit sheepish as far as being there with a retired jersey. There's a lot of players that you know, are deserving of that as well, but it's just one of those things that I guess at that time they selected me, and you know, it's a great honor. I mean, for to play for the Rough Riders all those years, and it's just a homegrown boy from Gull Lake. It's quite a thrill, and it's something beyond my expectations, that's for sure.
Do you have any secret talents that we don't know about?
I don't think I have too many secret talents. It was just one of those things playing football. I had great workout partners, myself, Bobby Jerson, and Bob Pulley, Dave Albright, Skullroot, you know, guys like that. We worked out hard together, and we had a lot of fun doing it. It's something that, for me, if that's a secret or not, I just, you know, worked hard and enjoyed it. I still enjoy going to the gym here in Lumsden right now at the present time, and it's that's just one of those things with football, and that it, when you do your workout, and that is just, to me, it was always fun.
Now, outside of the 89 championship, is there any moment in your career that really stands out as a highlight?
Well, unfortunately, I was at that time where we didn't have a whole lot of highlights, but I can certainly remember my first time I ever played at Mosaic Stadium, as it was, and then in those days it was Taylor Field, so you know, that memory of that, it was an exhibition game with the Rough Riders and playing with the Rams as well, too. But to actually go out there in front of the Rider Nation, and I mean, we had some fair-sized crowds at those times as well. And that was probably one of the first times that I ran on the field as far as, you know, in a Rough Rider uniform. That was pretty special, that's for sure.
Now, after years of playing in and just being at Taylor Field, what are your thoughts on the new Mosaic Stadium?
Well, I tell you, it's I've had the opportunity, PCL Garth Tomlinson give us a tour here about, I guess it was about 8 months before it was opening, so we had kind of a tour of the stadium. Then you could just see what it was all about and the great work that was done with it as well. And here about 3 weeks ago, I had the opportunity to my good friend Steve Mazurek give me a tour of the dressing rooms and such, and with Jeremy O'Day's help as well, they give me a tour of the dressing room. I thought that, you know, it's just amazing. The whole stadium is just great. I mean, it's something that it's hard to explain until you get there. I mean, it's just, I guess our first game was with the Rams and the Huskies when they played back last fall, and that was just a great game, and it was a good introduction to the stadium. But now as we get there, the first game against Winnipeg, you know, it was a good game, but unfortunately they lost, but it was still, it just seemed like it was like you're in a different part of the world with that stadium. But it's just, now that it's our stadium, it's going to be really, really special.
Now with the new stadium comes the new team, and as you mentioned, you get to be a fan again. What's your take on this team in 2017?
For me, being an old offensive lineman, I like watching the offensive line. I mean, it's, you know, when you look at their starting five with Brendan Labatt, Dan Clark, and Peter Dankowski, and Derek Dennis, and Thaddeus Coleman, I mean, those guys are only going to get better, and they played, as far as I'm concerned, they played really well the first games here, the first three games, and they're only going to get better, and their offensive line coach, Steven Sorlis, he's a good coach, and to me, they're working well together, and I think Peter Dankowski that they kind of brought in from Hamilton, I know he come from Toronto, but he's been a great addition to the team as well, and as long as they can stay healthy, they're going to have a great year. And with Kevin Glenn, our quarterback, I mean, he showed that he still has it. I mean, he's a good quarterback, and their defense is coming around now, and I think it's going to be a exciting year yet. They have the week off this week, and then they get right back at it against Calgary, and I think that's going to be a good test. It always is against Calgary in Calgary. But for all the years, Rough Riders usually play very well in Calgary, so look forward to it.
Now, I don't know if your friends Ray Algard or Dave Ridgway have told you, but we have this thing on our show called the CFL Hottie Bowl. Think of it as naming a Pro Bowl roster, but for the attractive men in the league. So I'm just wondering, who do you think from the 89 Grey Cup team should have been on the Hottie Bowl?
Well, it certainly wouldn't be none of our offensive linemen.
The offensive linemen still have a spot in the Hottie Bowl.
I would go with a guy like Dave Albright. Dave Albright, yeah.
You know, Dave Ridgway actually said that as well. That was his pick.
Mm-hmm. And that'd be my pick as well.
And he was always combing his hair, right?
Yeah, I mean, but he's one of those guys. He's a middle linebacker, and he was a stud. I mean, he's just a great guy, a great, great football player, and it's just, I always looked up to him, because without him, we wouldn't probably won the Grey Cup in 89. That's the way I look at it, and he's a good-looking guy.
Now, speaking of the team from 89 and the past here, now we don't want you to name any names. You can if you want. Are there any particular road trip stories that stand out during your career?
Yeah, I could reminisce a few, but one that sticks out probably a little bit is the Western Final when we played in Edmonton. Again, we're dating ourselves way back here. You guys ain't gonna remember, but this is what it was: is Bob Pulley in the offensive line. We went out for dinner, and Bob and I are roommates, and we come back the night before the game about 9 o'clock after having a good meal, after grazing in a restaurant for about 4 hours. I mean, getting our carbs up as far as offensive linemen go, and then we went back to the room and opened the room, and here Bob's bed was gone, and all his suitcase was out of the room and everything, and here was bed was leaning up against the wall out in the hallway, and here Glenn Suter and Ridgeway, of all guys, they played a little prank on us. So it was there's lots of great stories, but I mean that one kind of stuck out as the Western Final. Bob phones down the front desk and kind of questioned where his luggage is and that, but until we finally put two and two together, who was involved with it, it all come out as a good joke.
Dave actually told us that same story.
Who did?
Dave Ridgeway.
Oh, well, he was a conniver behind it all. Something better. Because we weren't there for the most part. It was just, we just come back and we're ready to have some relaxation. And the next thing you know, we're short of bed and a luggage. So it's kind of comical.
Well, Mr. Aldegg, thank you so much for your time, and we really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it, and all the best, and hope this season turns into being a season we'll remember for a long time.
I think we all have that same hope. Thank you so much.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
So there was Rider legend Roger Aldegg here on the Piffles podcast. If there's anyone that fits the saying Saskatchewan tough, it's him for sure. Now, finally, we have our Piffles Pick'em to get to. This week, we have 5 games. Because there's a game on Monday. Ottawa gets to play 3 games in 11 days, which is super sweet for them. And they're going to tell you how awesome that is and how safe it is, which is not the case whatsoever.
You know what? If they go 2-1 or 3-0 during this 11-game streak, you're never going to hear another goddamn peep out of it.
But the thing is, though, they're the best winless team ever if you talk to anybody.
My favorite, I got into a disagreement with someone who said that they're better than their record shows, which I've never bought that saying. Because you are exactly what your record shows. Are the Riders better than a 1-2 team? No, because if they were, they'd be better than 1-2.
They were who we thought they were?
Pretty much.
Yeah, that saying, I'm right with you. That saying is annoying.
Ottawa's 0-3-1 for a reason, because they've lost 3 of their games and tied the other one.
If you're doing power rankings, sure. Those I can see the better than their ranking, but when you're talking standings throughout the year,
that's exactly who you are. The record shows exactly what kind of team you are. You think the Detroit Lions that went 0-16 are going to come out and say, yeah, we're better than an 0-16 team? No, you weren't. You lost every single game. Anyway, let's get to our Piffles Pick'em. Montreal at Ottawa, Edmonton at Hamilton, Winnipeg at BC, the Riders, of course, in Calgary, and Ottawa at Toronto next Monday night. Amy's not here, but she did give me her picks, so I'll rip through her picks really quick. She has Montreal, Edmonton, BC, Calgary, and Ottawa. Verlin?
I have Montreal, Edmonton, BC, Saskatchewan, and Toronto.
Homer. I've got Montreal, Edmonton, BC, Calgary, Toronto.
I have Ottawa, Edmonton, BC, Calgary, Ottawa.
I've got Montreal. Can I take Edmonton to win twice in Hamilton?
Yes, but it only counts for one, though.
Okay, well, I'll take them twice then. BC, Calgary, and Toronto.
So I am King Homer this week.
There's not a single shocked face at this table.
No.
Although, let's be real, I almost picked the Riders because I am King Homer.
I thought about it, but I couldn't. I can't.
I need to beat everybody else in the standings, so that's why I picked Calgary.
I'm getting destroyed in the stats.
It's okay. You could go 5-0 this week and probably catch the rest of us that have been picking since week one. So,
well, that's going to do it for us this week. Thanks so much for joining us. Thanks to our guests, Riders legend Roger Aldegg, Calgary Stampeders play-by-play guy Mark Steven, and of course, guest hosting on this show is this week filling in for Amy. Greg, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up on next week's show, we're going to recap the Riders versus Stamps game. We're going to preview the Riders against the Argos, which is Saturday, July 29th here in Regina at Mosaic Stadium. We'll have a rant, 2 entrants into the Hottie Bowl, real ones this time, not just honorary members, but still congratulations, Dalts. Our Coney Island Piffles player profile, engaging with the enemy, and much more CFL talk. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, at PifflesPod. You can follow me, at RealAlexD.
I'm at Safamod.
I'm at Fernie635.
And I'm at Greg on Sports.
And make sure you follow Amy at CFL Hottie Bowl. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. Instagram, just search PifflesPod. And check out the website, PifflesPodcast.com. As always, Piffles Podcast is brought to you by Bryn Werrett at Royal LePage Regina Realty. Check out BrynWerrett.com. That's BrynWerrett.com. Thanks for listening. We're drinking time.
football problem.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.